As you know, this summer we've been talking about origin stories, about how we got here and the meaning of where we are and why we are here. We talked about Jacob wrestling with God. We talked about Joseph, the dreamer, and talked about the dreamer from various angles. And all of these stories we're looking at are in the book of Genesis, our sacred text, origin story, if you will. They're stories about the Hebrew people and how they came to be in relationship with one another and with their neighbors as well. And much of the Bible, the Hebrew Bible, comes together when they're sitting on the rivers and the banks in Babylon, when they're in exile, and they're trying to make sense of their story. And part of what we do as a people, and we're doing with our summer series too, is to sit and try to make sense of our stories as well. Today we look at the beginning of our sacred text, the creation story. And we've heard it told several times in our song and in our reading already this morning. But I think it's really important that our sacred text begins with a poem. This text at the beginning is filled with refrains and rhythms that we've heard sung and repeated. And God said, "Let there be." And there was light, and God saw that it was good, and there was evening and morning the first day. And on it goes. Genesis 1 is a sweeping poem about God's presence, about God as creator, about the interconnectedness of all creation. And it's into this creation that humanity comes. So I'm really excited that this morning I've invited Jess Lynn to come join me for us to talk a little bit about the poetry of creation and how both poetry and creation work in us as a part of our life. So as we mentioned, we've been using Miguel de la Torre's commentary on the book of Genesis this summer, and one of the quotes that I love from his book, he writes that the author of Genesis writes as a poet, not a scientist. The purpose is not to convey scientific or historical facts, rather to convey truths about the character of this God of creation. With that, Jess, I wonder if we could begin with you telling us a story or two about the origins of your faith, the religious and spiritual background of your childhood, and how that's evolved some over time.
Sure. And thank you for being here. And I'm especially glad that there's some old school Calvary people here today. Over there, Katie, Amy, and Ashley. And very excited to be here and to bring the poets along. For me, one of the origins of the origin of my faith story is also poetic and begins when I was very young, probably maybe kindergarten-ish. And my father, who was old enough to be my grandfather, a very old father, and was very much a grounded, mechanic, cowboy, Texan man, woke us all up in the middle of the night. We went to the table and the kitchen table for a family meeting at 2 a.m., something like that. And he said, "God spoke to me in a dream, and we're all going to church tomorrow." And I was like, "Okay." And so it begins. And so who knows what that was? And, you know, it could have been, you know, Gabriel himself. It could have been a bad burrito, but it doesn't matter. My life was changed because of it, and I'm better for it. And so I think that's kind of getting at a similar strand with what Miguel de la Torre is saying there.
And you said for you that really sort of sparked, like, regardless of whether your family continued on with church and things like that, that it just really sparked a love for that shared worship experience, even at a really early age.
That's right. So we started going to a church there in Texas, and when we moved, not long after that, my family looked for a new church, and looking back, I think it was more like cultural displacement, that they couldn't find the right fit, but still considered themselves Christians. But I kept going. I went by myself to a Lutheran church, and I joined the youth group and everything, but I sat in church, like I loved church, and that's always been the case for some weird reason. And even when I lived in Latin America, I would go to Catholic church because it was kind of the only thing that I could find. And you know, it's not It's not like I believed everything or agreed to everything they said, but I wanted that experience. Like, I wanted to sit with my brothers and sisters and sing to God. So
beautiful. So one of the reasons why we chose the creation story as our focal passage today from Genesis is because you also have, not only is this a poem, but you have a profound love of both poetry and creation. So I wonder if you could say a little bit more about when you felt first drawn to poetry and what it is you love about it and how that relates to your faith.
Yeah. I think it really started for me, my love of poetry, in, and especially mystic poets, was in college. My roommate bought this book, and I stole it from her. And it was, it's life-changing for me, and you could tell it's well-loved. And the, she asked for it back at some point, and I said, that's not going to happen, Margo. And so so I had to buy her her own copy. Yeah. I wonder if she still has it. But, yeah, and the one of the thing, it was just the mystic's view of God and was so striking to me. And the and just this humble God, this loving God. And the one of the poems I remember in particular that struck me at that time, that was like really knocked me off my feet, was a St. Thomas Aquinas poem, who's a Catholic from the 13th century. Who also loves creation a lot too. But he has a poem called The Christ Said that I'll share with you. He says, "The Christ said to us, 'I have cut you from a garden I tend and set you in a vase for the world to see. Soon you will return, for your glorious presence I miss. My hands need to touch you again. My divine senses and eyes require your soul's beauty near. Forgive me, my love, for the suffering our separation brought. If I said I am in debt to you, could you understand?'" That's like,
yeah,
that's a humble God. That's love. Like, he means it. And yeah. That's a very, you know, on one level, maybe that's the same thing as the, like, Jesus on the cross, right? But on another level, that sounds really different than, like, Adam sinned, or maybe Eve tricked him, and you're Eve's daughter, and then Jesus had to die.
Some biological thread that then requires blood.
Yeah, that he's sorry, like he's hurting, that he's away from you. Like, that was big news for me.
That's beautiful. Can you say a little more about how poems sort of stick with you, or maybe like work in you over time?
Sure. They definitely stick around. Like, sometimes I feel like I'll wrestle with them for a really long time. Like, it just keeps coming back. Like, at one point, Mary Oliver's journey, where she says at the beginning, "One day you finally knew what you had to do and you began, though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice. Every day for a year, Mary told me you knew what you had to do." And I said, "I'm not ready, Mary." And she just kept coming back, you know. There's other ones too that I'll wrestle with. And it's not always I love dogs. Like Rumi saying, like, you know, the other day, this was recently, I heard Rumi be like, "There's love dogs that no one knows the name of. Give your life to be one of them." And then the other part of me was like, Rumi is a jerk, and he probably had a dirt floor. Why are you listening to him? You know? But the...
So it's a real conversation, right? Like, an ongoing, like, evolution. I think you even said at one point in time, sometimes a poem will come to your mind, and it's like, that brings up... It's like it's showing you something that you didn't even know that you needed to see, or that was...
I do feel like they're speaking to me sometimes. Yeah, that part of me's pulling them up, or they're coming, or... I had a professor who, she talks about the poets all the time. The poets are here, you know, and that they have things to offer. I also think sometimes I'm searching for them like a first aid kit. I'll stop my little timer at work, and I'm like, "Oop, gotta find this perfect poem," you know, or a friend is in need, and I'm like, "I know this thing. It's the perfect band-aid. It's the perfect balm," and it's a poem that I feel like they need. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, I think deacons and others have been the good beneficiaries of your poems you'll share, and sometimes after a sermon as well. We give thanks for when you offer those to us too. So today's poem is about creation and about its goodness. In fact, Miguel de la Torre urges us to remain clear, aware, present to the fact that we're not actually above or separate from creation, but rather we are part of creation. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could say a little more about how you feel connected to creation and how that's grown in you.
Mm-hmm. The poets have been around for 20 years or something, but the creation connection has been more recent in my mm-hmm. life in the last few years. And I think I first started noticing it when I was going in need of healing and going through a healing cycle where I was struggling with something. I started running again, and I was running on Sligo Creek by Silver Spring, and I would be running along, and then I would just notice, I just felt like I needed to get in the water, and I'd be taking off my shoes and just walking on the rocks mm-hmm. in the creek, and again, it seemed weird, but I was just living the experience, why am I getting in this water, you know? But it felt like healing, you know? Mm-hmm. And it felt like I was suffering, and the trees were there, they were witnesses, you know? Mm-hmm.
It's really beautiful. Yeah. And though I can't say that I know so much about Star Trek, you said that Star Trek even is one of the things that pointed you to.
Yeah. I think
this
around
connection with the Earth.
Exactly. I think I've talked to Tim or Amy about this once, but
I got thumbs up from both of them.
I didn't know about Star Trek. And around that same time when I was wow, what does it mean that I feel like these trees are helping me or this water is helping me, that I started watching Star Trek and it's pretty awesome that we didn't have to terraform the Earth. Do y'all know what terraforming is? Yeah. Okay. Y'all know. And so you have to make the planet inhabitable for humans. Okay. We didn't have to do it. Yeah. It's already everything we need is already here. The Earth is all the air and the water and everything is here. And not only are we made out of the Earth and everything we need is here, but also it's beautiful to us. Mm. What's the point of a flower? You know, or the sunset, the naturally occurring phenomena in the Earth are already beautiful. Mm-hmm. And in our view, at least, maybe they're not to a Klingon, but they are to a human.
Oh boy. I love it.
And that beauty serves a purpose too. Yeah. That beauty is healing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think healing is definitely one of the themes that we kept coming back to over and over again. And I think the other word that comes to me now is just that the Earth nourishes us, mm-hmm. it really takes care of. We share a love of the poet Mary Oliver. I know you've already spoken her into this room, but for her, poetry and creation are intimately and profoundly interwoven. I wonder if you can say more about what connects you to her, and maybe read one of her poems too.
Yeah, she's definitely an expert in that. Sometimes I think her and God just loved Mary Oliver and loved to be watch, watch, watch. I'm gonna show her this butterfly, and it's gonna blow her mind that she saw the butterfly, and and somehow achieve enlightenment at the same time. And I think she is a mystic in her own right because she's captured rapture, that awe. She's she knows awe. She says I want it to be said of my life when I die that I was a bride of amazement. Mm. Well, I'm saying it. She passed a couple years ago, I think. And as far as the creation, in one of your favorite poems, Wild Geese, she does that a really good job, I think, of expressing that what I was trying to say about Star Trek, I was made for the earth was made for me, we're connected. In the last stanza of it, she says, whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things.
Amen. Yeah.
Another good example of her blending the creation with her spirituality and It's called The Summer Day. I often refer to it as the grasshopper poem. But another thing I like about this poem I'm about to read is that she does some, and that makes me feel, think that identify her as a mystic, is that they're honest. Like, the mystics are intellectually honest. Like, as imaginative as they are, like, they're not going to have, like, they will not let anyone have a monopoly on God, and they will not stand for someone saying they know something in a factual sense when the truth is you don't know. Yeah, and I think she hits at it in this poem called The Summer Day. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?
Amen.
Amen.
I think we talked a little bit just about how not only does our sacred text in Scripture, you know, serve us as sacred texts, but sometimes, like, there are other texts and even creation that speaks to us as sacred texts. How has that come about for you? Like, how have you learned to, let the poems do their work in you, or let creation move, I guess?
I think that, this book in particular that kind of, like, kicked things off for me was, it took me a long time to accept that the poems are sacred text. Like, I think I was, like, afraid of heresy, and that I was afraid to say it. I was afraid to say that there was sacred text that wasn't the Bible, you know? And that, which is kind of funny, because the mystics themselves are the ones who constantly say, and, you know, this is full of Catholics and Muslims and Hindus and, you know, all sorts of faith traditions who are extremely devoted monks and priests. And they're constantly, again, saying no one has this monopoly on God. And, you know, Oliver says, let the soft animal of your body love what it loves, right?
Favorite line of mine.
Saint John of the Cross, San Juan de la Cruz, escribe un poema muy bonito. Él dice, él escribe, Dios dijo, soy lo que se ama. No soy lo que debe ser amado. Tan cruel sería eso para mi novia. God said, I am what is loved. I am not what should be loved. This would be so terrible for my novia, my bride, right? And we are God's bride, right? And so they were telling me it's okay, you know. And so it took a long time to accept that, but it was very freeing when I did.
I know sometimes you actually write poetry as well. I'm wondering if you would talk a little bit about that. I happen to be the beneficiary of one that she wrote for me. I was struggling with vertigo, where I was feeling dizzy for almost a year and a half. And she wrote this beautiful little poem that in some ways even let me receive what gift it might have to be offering me. And so what's it been like to not just read poetry, but to let yourself, or to invite yourself to write poetry as well?
I don't write a lot of poetry, and I don't, like, set aside time or, like, try to write it, really. I just allow it when it comes, right? And I think that's really key, because I think we often, especially in Washington, D.C., don't, like, we think, I'm not a poet, so I don't do that. But, like, you are. Like, I am here to tell you, you are poets. Like, you are creative. You are poets. You are artists. And, like, just, like, let it come. Or, like, just get out of your way, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, and don't judge it. Yeah. You know, it's not, you don't need to make money off your poetry. Like, yeah. Just enjoy writing it. And so, yeah, so I think that's kind of like the process. And then one of the things that I love about it, and I notice when it comes, is that, you know, life is very multifaceted. Yes. That, like, frequently, especially in my job, I'm trying to get to a specific outcome. Mm-hmm. Like, and most of us are, you know, but it allows you, I think poems are really good at allowing you to capture one moment. To capture like that one side of the diamond, that one truth or that one reflection. And like, and it doesn't matter how, you don't have to figure out exactly how that moment contributes to the bottom line. You can just capture it and enjoy it and know that little truth or that emotion or whatever it was.
Yeah. It's really beautiful. In our conversation, I mentioned to you that most of my life, I thought I wasn't creative. And slowly over time, I realized how, yeah, maybe there was a particular kind of creativity that wasn't my natural gift, but that I, too, was creative. And I was sharing with you that one of the little practices that I kind of picked up was at Christmas, Advent one year, just started drawing these little mandalas, which are just little circles that sort of center your attention and thinking, and just even something as simple as that, sort of inviting me in. You spoke of like this book that you had engaged called The Artist's Way, that a good friend here at Calvary, a former member, had told you about. Will you say more about that and how that sort of shaped your mm-hmm. understanding of?
Sure. This was, many of you remember or know Carolyn Armijo, who's an artist and was a Calvary member. For literally 10 years, she told me to read this book.
And I was like, so if you need Jess to do something, keep telling her. Yeah.
And then I finally did it. And it's like, it's not just a book. It's like a 12-week program that has like different tasks you have to do. You have to write every day. You have to take yourself on an artist date every week by yourself to go do something that like your inner artist wants to do, which could be like going to the dollar store to buy stickers, or it could be going to a museum or wherever. Anyways, and when I finally did it, then I called her. I was like, this book's amazing. Like, this is changing my life. Yeah. So it's very good. I think that one of the big takeaways from it, and I'm hoping maybe we could get a group together to do it at Calvary, is that it got me away from like just the achieving model. And again, that's very DC. Like, people are really good at getting it done, you know, and it was like, you know, you can do things for the joy of doing them, not just because they have this incredible outcome. And like, that was news to me. And like, and it led me to like experiment with all this stuff. Like I started painting, and like I'm not good at painting. Like, but that's not the point, you know? And like, I like had wanted to have a garden for so long, and I finally was, and I was like, but I didn't, you know, take a gardening course, and I didn't like read all the gardening blogs or whatever, you know? And it was like, it's just dirt. Like, you know, like
just plant it already.
It's okay. Like, if you don't get cucumbers, you can buy them at the store. Like, you know, like, it's like your life does not depend on this garden. Just do it because you want to. Like, that's the good enough reason, you know? And like, that was really from that book. And so, and I think it dovetails into like all of the creativity things.
Yeah. We talk some about our inner critics from time to time. We've talked about it in this space. I'm wondering how your creative self maybe brings healing or offers some relief to your own inner critic, if you will.
Yeah. That's hard. I feel like I always, whenever I'm going like struggling through something like internal or a change in my life, like I like first try to depose it and like instruct the witness to answer.
Interrogate.
Thoroughly. I'm like, I'm going to write it down and it's going to be a logic problem, you know, that sort of thing. And it rarely works that way. Like, and I know it, but I can't get to the place until I'm ready to get to the place. And like and it's usually the easing up and like, okay, ask the question again with compassion and curiosity, you know, or like, and those are when it, like, that easing up system or kind of thing. And the, And but also the poets speak a lot about like giving yourself a break, you know. And I'll share, Hafiz is a Persian genius poet. He has a really good one that comes to mind sometimes when I both personally, but also even at work, where I'm like, I messed that up, you know. Then I often hear this poem. It's called "My Sweet Crushed Angel." And also, and no, you should know there's a little bit of code words with the mystics, like beautiful one, partner. Those are often God, or lover can be God. Wine sometimes, or references to the party or wine, are often about like the ecstatic mystic experience and the unity with God. So, a little background. "You have not danced so badly, my dear, trying to hold hands with the beautiful one. You have waltzed with great style, my sweet crushed angel, to have ever neared God's heart at all. Our partner is notoriously difficult to follow, and even his best musicians are not always easy to hear. So what if the music has stopped for a while? So what if the price of admission to the divine is out of reach tonight? So what, my sweetheart, if you lack the ante to gamble for real love? The mind and the body are famous for holding the heart ransom. But Hafiz knows the beloved's eternal habits. Have patience, for he will not be able to resist your longings and charms for long. You have not danced so badly, my dear, trying to kiss the magnificent one. You have actually waltzed with tremendous style, my sweet, oh my sweet crushed angel."
Amen. Miguel de la Torre also writes that the purpose of our sacred texts, of these texts in Genesis, is not to elucidate the how or the mechanics of creation like we've talked, but rather to seek answers about the why, the ultimate questions facing humanity. I love the way that he describes that about Genesis, our origin stories, our listening to them as seeking answers to big questions. I'm wondering what questions drive you these days. What questions capture your imagination?
Well, one of the things I've been thinking about this week since we talked is that when we were talking about the poems being sacred texts, Sally said that she thought our whole lives are sacred texts. Like our lives, the story of our life is a sacred text. And I hadn't ever heard it framed that way before. And so I kind of like tried it on this week to precise, you know. I like it. I was like, this is powerful. Like I think that just when I think about the Bible, like there's so many stories in the Bible, and there's the ups and the downs, right? And there's really awful, horrible things. And like, there's awful, horrible things in my life. Like they're like the Peruvian, Cesar Vallejo, no? He's Peruano, no? He says, "Hay golpes en la vida tan fuerte. Ay, yo no sé." You know, he's just saying like, it's so bad. Sometimes I have nothing to say, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think there's some terrible stuff in our sacred texts that we have to, like, thankfully we're at a church that at least calls it out and says, like, this is bad. I'm not going to pretend like it's okay that he sold his daughters to, you know, whatever. So I think I've been thinking about, like, what does that mean for to be sacred texts? And it's hopeful. It's hopeful because we know in part, right? And so we're just, the story continues, and it's like, oh, I wonder what this thing that happened in my life will mean, how it'll feel or look in a few years or things like that.
It's like that whole notion of creativity and curiosity and even almost like a gentleness or a care in the holding what it is we are examining, if you will. Yeah. For me, this conversation with Jess has been a really beautiful invitation to poetry, to creation, to the interconnectedness of all things, to our creative selves. For those who find resonance in all of this and perhaps even interest with a little bit of hesitation, but you're willing to lean in a little bit anyway, what do you hope that people hear, or what stories even do you hope people will tell themselves about opening up to this creative knowing?
Yeah, I think like the biggest thing is kind of what I've already said, that like I don't have, like I've never taken like a class in poetry, or I don't have like a literary background or anything like that. Like I literally just read it. Like, you know, that's it. And so like you don't need to be an expertise in that same of like in poetry or in anything artistic or creative. Like you already are that. Like if one of my favorite sayings is like, if you can walk, you can dance. If you can talk, you can sing. And so like it's already in you. And the same thing with like creation, like it really is offering itself to you, and you're already a part of it, whether you like being around trees or not, you know? And so like one really good resource I'll offer you is there's a guy, I think he himself is a poet, Roger Housden, who has a series of books. And this was the first book I found. The second book, I was at staying at someone's grandma's farmhouse, and I almost stole this book. But I felt guilty, I think I took it, and yeah. I went back. And I was like, wait, Amazon? Okay. And it was called, he has a series of like very small books, not intimidating at all. And they're called, like the first one was called 10 Poems to Change Your Life. And like, that sounds cheesy, and usually I'm too cool for such things, but they're really good. And so like, it's okay. Just embrace the cheese and like go with it. So he like curates different poems around certain themes, and then he has the poem, and then he gives a little essay, and his essays are very insightful, and they help you appreciate it more, you know, the poem more. So like, that's a really good resource. And also like poetry, like, you know, we've talked a lot about the mystics, which like speak to me, but it's not always that. Like sometimes it's just like your soul also needs to delight. Like that's good. Like even if we're not talking about spirituality or God, like God is happy when you're happy. And so the poems can also, like the poets can also offer that. And one of my favorite delightful poems is a Pablo Neruda poem. He's like really well known for his love poems, which I think suck. But but he has a really good a set of odes called Odes to Common Things. This is a very good book if you're working on your Spanish or your English, because it has the poems side by side in both languages. And so I'll read one in Spanish that's one of my favorite poems, called Ode to My Socks. And if you want a good English translation, email me and I can send you one. But this is so good. It's about a woman who knits him socks, and he's just going off about these amazing socks that she knit her, or she knit him. Oda a los calcetines. Me trajo Maru Mori un par de calcetines que tejió con sus manos de pastora. Dos calcetines suaves como liebres. En ellos metí los pies como en dos estuches tejidos con hebras del crepúsculo y pellejo de ovejas. Violentos calcetines, mis pies fueron dos pescados de lana, dos largos tiburones de azul ultramarino atravesados por una trenza de oro, dos gigantescos mirlos, dos cañones, mis pies fueron honrados en este modo por estos celestiales calcetines. Eran tan hermosos que por primera vez mis pies me parecieron inaceptables, como dos decrépitos bomberos, bomberos indignos de aquel fuego bordado, de aquellos luminosos calcetines. Sin embargo, resistí la tentación aguda de guardarlos como los colegiales preservan las luciérnagas, como los eruditos coleccionan documentos sagrados. Resistí el impulso furioso de ponerlos en una aula de oro y darles cada día alpiste y pulpa de melón rosada, como descubridores que en la selva entregan el rarísimo venado verde al asador y se lo comen con remordimiento. Estiré los pies y me enfundé los bellos calcetines y luego los zapatos. Y es esta la moral de mi oda. Dos veces es belleza la belleza, y lo que es bueno es doblemente bueno cuando se trata de dos calcetines de lana en el invierno. estoy diciendo es muy importante que la poesía no es solo no es algo solamente espiritual, puede ser eso, pero también puede ser caprichoso y divertido, y eso es bueno para la alma, de tener diversión y eso, que cuando estamos felices, Dios es feliz también.
Jess, I'm incredibly grateful to you for your willingness to share a portion of your origin story with us. What a wonder it has been. And we were reflecting just before we came up to that. I think in a moment like this one, we also need access to another kind of knowing, right? Like to be able to find some open spaces and creativity and third ways, et cetera. And I'm just wondering if that resonates with you.
Yeah, I think that I often like wonder what the poets think about like the political climate that we're in, and but it's not so much that they have a response to it, I think, as that like yelling back is important, and it only gets us so far. Like it doesn't really repair the damage, you know. Like it has its place, like that. It has its place, but it's not where I'm finding the healing, I notice. Like, mm-hmm. I'm finding the healing when I'm out on the water, mm-hmm. or, you know, when I'm mesmerized by what they're saying. And they're calling, it's like they're calling you back to a center that, like, you had to go fight and come back home and get rest and reparation, mm-hmm. or repair. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have been invited today to consider the sacred texts of your own life, to consider the sacred texts and the poetry in our sacred texts. So not just this Genesis 1 or the Psalms or many other things, but so much of what we even hold as our sacred texts is actually poetry. And it invites us to be present to it in a way that you've demonstrated for us today. And I give thanks for that. And I pray that we all might find wonder and be willing to just try a little something creative this week, just because you want to.